There is a lot of noise, hype, slop, think pieces, and vibes-based analysis about what the economic impacts of AI might be. At this point, I'm sure we've all read claims that AI is going to transform or supercharge economies and economic development. And these headlines track with what some of those in Silicon Valley circles have been saying. Sam Altman said in an interview that he thinks it would be good to end poverty. Maybe you think we should stop technology that can do that. The now famous AI 2027 forecast made the following prediction for 2029, that even in developing countries, poverty becomes a thing of the past, thanks to UBI and foreign aid. That's in their positive scenario, and even in their negative scenario, where humanity is extinct by the mid-2030s, at least by 2029, there has been an end to all poverty. And Dario Amodei, in his essay Machines of Loving Grace, says that he is optimistic about quickly bringing AI's biological advances to people in the developing world. He is hopeful, though not confident, that AI can also enable unprecedented economic growth rates and allow the developing world to at least surpass where the developed world is now. Welcome back to another episode of Ideas in Development. This is the first episode of our new series on AI. In this series of Ideas in Development, we have two main goals. The first is to discuss where policymakers need answers now. And the second is learning to think like an economist about AI and what its impacts might be. Through 10 episodes, we're going to try and cover the economic research and thinking that we feel is important and relevant. For these episodes, I'm extremely lucky to be joined by Dina Musa, who is a researcher and grant maker at Coefficient Giving. You might have heard of them under their previous name, which was Open Philanthropy. Dina, welcome to Ideas in Development.
Thanks for having me.
So Dina, before getting into kind of AI, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about your work day to day.
I work as a researcher and grant maker at Coefficient Giving, as you said. And my job is essentially to figure out how to allocate scarce resources across different problems within global health and development writ large. In particular, I manage our incubation programs, which is the set of cause areas that we are newest to. And that means spending a lot of time evaluating evidence, building rough models of impact, and trying to understand where an extra dollar or even an extra month of work might do the most good.
And AI comes into that?
It does in a couple of ways. The first is that we're increasingly being asked to assess projects that use AI in areas like health or agriculture or government support in low and middle income countries. And second, AI itself might change some of the core constraints that development economists have traditionally been focused on. So things like a shortage of skilled labor or a weak state capacity or limited access to expertise might change significantly with the advent of AI.
And on top of the day job, you've also been writing about AI. What are some of the topics that you've been covering?
I would say a lot of that writing has tried to interrogate claims about automation and productivity. So, for example, why very capable AI systems haven't yet translated into large productivity gains in some sectors where we expected them to, or why replacing a task on paper is not necessarily the same as replacing a job in practice. I've also written about how these dynamics look different in lower income settings, where the counterfactual often isn't a human expert necessarily, but usually no service at all. Before we go too far, it's probably useful to be clear about what we mean by AI, because it means very different things to different people and in different conversations. In this series, when I talk about AI, I'm mostly referring to machine learning systems that can perform or augment specific tasks, things like prediction, classification, pattern recognition, or decision support. I'm not necessarily talking about projected future general intelligence that can do everything a human can do perfectly. And I think that distinction matters significantly for development because task-level tools interact very differently with labor markets and institutions than a full job replacement would. And I think a lot of the confusion in public debates comes from sliding between these meanings without realizing it. So when I'm referring to AI, I'm referring to usually what we have as of today, rather than even short-term projections into the future.
And when you hear statements like the ones I referred to at the start of this episode from those who are kind of leading these AI labs about, for example, AI ending poverty in the very near future, what stands out to you?
I think two main things stand out. The first is that big claims about AI impacts often come directly from claims about technological capability. So what an AI system would be able to do. But they often skip over the economic and institutional steps that would need to happen for capabilities to translate into improvements in living standards. And I think the second is that most of these claims are implicitly based on rich country contexts and information. They usually assume things like a reliable infrastructure or functioning labor markets or reasonably strong and functioning institutions, and then might extrapolate some of those assumptions to low and middle income countries where I think the constraints are quite different. So it's not necessarily that these statements are obviously wrong. It's that they rely on a lot of unstated assumptions that are doing a lot of the work.
So you're not against being optimistic, but it's just that the mechanism between AI improving and outcomes like poverty ending are often being left unspecified.
Exactly. I think these are under-discussed. The middle part between AI achieving some capability and some outcome in the world is often left unsaid. And I think once you start asking what has to happen in between, the story becomes more complicated, more nuanced, and more context dependent in ways that I think are both interesting and important.
Yeah, and I think that's a useful place to start. I guess many listeners might be thinking we'll be following the kind of typical path of a podcast about AI where you have these kind of specific timelines in mind and these verdicts about whether AI is good or bad for development. And in terms of what we're actually aiming to do, this is not going to be a podcast that's trying to tell you exactly what the world looks like in 10 years.
That's right. We don't have clean, well-identified answers about the macroeconomic impacts of AI yet. And I think to claim otherwise is overstating what the evidence can support. But what we can do is distinguish between better and worse arguments. We can ask which claims are grounded in historical experience or what has happened in somewhat analogous situations and where the biggest uncertainties still lie.
What we're saying is that this is less about precise forecasting and more about being skeptical in a disciplined way based on some of the tools and theories that we have from economics.
That's a very good way of putting it. Often I find that if you can describe the world in the way it is today very accurately, that can almost seem or come off like a forecast because it's a hard thing to do and very few people can do it. And because so much of what happens in the immediate future is extrapolation of existing constraints and incentives. So the goal here is to be precise about what we know, what we don't, and what would need to be true for different futures to materialize.
Yeah, so if we're summarizing what the lens of this series of conversations with those involved in AI is going to be, I guess that is one of the core principles, right? We're going to take uncertainty seriously. When the evidence is thin or our conversation kind of gets into these more speculative topics, we're going to try and say so and clearly indicate that we are being speculative. And where decisions still have to be made, despite all of this uncertainty, we will try to clarify some of the different trade-offs that policymakers are facing. Are there any other kind of lenses that come to mind?
There are two more that I would highlight. The first is that we're going to focus more on mechanisms rather than end states. So instead of starting with, will AI end poverty, I think we'll ask questions like, what specific tasks does AI change? Who is likely to adopt it and when? How do these changes actually propagate through firms and through labor markets and through institutions? And the second is that we're going to pay pretty close attention to context. I think the same technology can have very different effects depending on labor abundance or state capacity or infrastructure. And all of these things look very different in low and middle income countries than they do in Silicon Valley or in the US writ large.
One thing that I've noticed when trying to follow this debate and a lot of the writing about the economic impacts of AI is that there's very much these two different camps that seem to be speaking different languages. You have kind of the tech camp that is talking very confidently about the progress that's going to happen. And then you have economists who tend to be more cautious, sometimes to the point of kind of sounding almost evasive. Why do you think there is such a big gap in these two ways of talking about AI?
I think a big part of it comes down to what each group is ultimately focused on and optimizing for. Technologists are often focused on expanding capabilities and thinking about what a system can do under ideal conditions or in a benchmarking test. And in that world, progress can be very rapid and very visible. You run a benchmark, the numbers go up, the model gets better. It's a very tangible sense of momentum. I think economists, by contrast, tend to worry less about what's technically possible and more about what happens once a technology is embedded in an economy. And that means asking questions about adoption, incentives, coordination, institutions, all these things that tend to move much more slowly and much less cleanly than technological advancements. So they're thinking about slightly different things.
They're basically answering different questions when they're talking about kind of the economic impacts of AI.
I think so. I think when technologists say, this tool can do X, they're usually right in a pretty specific sense. But then when someone jumps from that to this will replace all people who can do X, economists tend to get a little bit more uncomfortable because there's a huge chain of assumptions connecting those two statements. And what's tricky is that those assumptions are often implicit and unstated. Things like the tool works in all circumstances of the job, or the firm will adopt the technology quickly, or it's interoperable with the other roles that haven't been automated yet, and institutions will adapt to that.
Yeah, and I guess the kind of discomfort of economists of kind of wading into this debate can come across almost as quite unhelpful and evasive, especially when policymakers right now are needing to make these important decisions.
I think that's true. And I think that is a source of frustration, that policymakers and decision makers in general are operating under time pressure and they want guidance. And often the economics is a little bit unsettled and the response is, it depends. But I think there's an important distinction between acting under uncertainty and pretending that uncertainty doesn't exist. So I think economists rightly tend to be pretty wary of false confidence and making stronger claims that later turn out to be wrong. But with that said, I think we can highlight, what we do know and what we don't.
Yeah, and I guess that tension almost feels even sharper in the world of development.
Much sharper. I think in high-income countries, some of the assumptions that can be glossed over, things like having reliable infrastructure or formal labor markets, are roughly true. But in many low and middle income countries, even those aren't. So when someone makes a confident global claim about AI's economic impact, economists working in development generally start to ask, okay, in what countries, under what institutions, for which types of workers?
Yeah, so I guess it's not necessarily that economists are kind of this group of really techno-pessimistic people or that they're super anti-AI. It's just that they're kind of a bit more allergic to extrapolating from a really good AI model to real world impact.
That is my interpretation too. I think many economists are genuinely excited about AI's potential, but that excitement doesn't necessarily remove the need to understand how technologies diffuse and who specifically will benefit along the way. And so I think one of the goals of the series is to slow the conversation down enough to make all of those assumptions visible.
And we've talked a lot already about kind of uncertainty. And if you're a decision maker listening to this, you could probably reasonably ask, well, what evidence would or should change your mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's an important one to be explicit about. I think it starts with distinguishing between signals that maybe sound impressive and signals that are truly economically meaningful. So for example, a large number of users signed up or an impressive benchmark results does tell us something. It tells us about interest or technological capability, but it doesn't necessarily tell us much about productivity or wages or living standards. What would be much more informative is evidence about sustained adoption and integration into everyday workflows and whether that adoption is actually changing the terminal outcomes we care about.
And what does that look like specifically in low and middle income countries, which is going to be the focus of this series?
Yeah, there I think many of the most exciting use cases are ones where AI might relax binding constraints rather than just improving already well-functioning systems. So for example, does it meaningfully extend access to expertise where none existed before? Does it allow professionals who are very scarce, like doctors or teachers or civil servants, to serve more people without degrading quality? Or does it mostly benefit only settings that already have strong capacity?
Yeah, and that brings us to the specific topics we're going to be covering in our series. Through our conversations, we're going to try our best to cover the frontier of economic research on the impacts of AI in low and middle income countries, and also equip you with ways of thinking about AI so that you can kind of cut through the noise and all of the headlines about the economic impacts to establish what is worth listening to and what isn't.
Each episode focuses on a specific part of that puzzle, so places where the economics is unclear and where the context matters. Each episode focuses on a specific part of that puzzle. We'll start by looking backward. In our first episode, we bring on Bruno Cappuccini to look together at one of the most common historical analogies people make when talking about AI, the Industrial Revolution. We'll talk in some detail about how that played out economically. So what did technological change actually look like when it first unfolded? How long did it take for living standards to rise? And what kinds of disruption and backlash showed up along the way? And then we'll also discuss in what ways AI is similar and different and how far the analogy can really go. From there, we'll move on to one of the first hurdles for AI adoption in low and middle income countries, energy and infrastructure. With Rose Mutiso, we ask whether AI can really take off in sub-Saharan Africa within current infrastructure and what the key constraints are. Then we'll turn to measure the real-world impact of AI with Anton Koronek. We'll discuss benchmarks and how to read and interpret the results, which are not always as straightforward as the headline.
Yeah, and the first episode of those that you mentioned on the Industrial Revolution will be out on Thursday. And over the rest of the podcast, we've got a number of other conversations with expert guests to talk about how AI is currently being used on the ground in low and middle income countries, how the diffusion of new technologies has worked historically, and what we can learn from that. And then we'll also be discussing AI in labor markets, service-led growth models in an age of AI, and a whole lot more.
Running through all of these conversations is a broader question we keep coming back to, which is, how should economists think about AI differently from past technologies? Given the speed of technological progress, its wide scope, and the fact that so much of the R&D is concentrated in a small number of firms.
And our hope is, by the end of the series, you will have a clearer sense of the claims about AI and development that are grounded in evidence, which ones rely on kind of strong assumptions, and where the real uncertainties actually lie. This has been Ideas in Development, a VoxDev podcast on economic policy and research. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can watch us on the VoxDev YouTube channel.